My name is Kelly Hamby. I teach in the education department here at Abilene Christian University. The only reason I tell you that is I many times go to meetings and see people and introduce, and I wonder who in the world that person was who was doing the introducing. Our resource person today is Dr. Clyde Austin. Clyde has his wife, Sheila, and two daughters here, Jim and Joanna. We're very pleased to have them. We know them well. Joanna was a classmate of our son's. And as I introduce Dr. Austin, let me just tell you, he's been at ACU for 26 years, and I'd like to think that anybody who's been at ACU for that long has some reason for being here. I'm not going to tell you about all of these degrees and all of these certificates and all of that kind of thing. Except I still don't know what a family service provider or whatever it is. After class, I've got to ask him what that one is. I want to tell you something else about him. He's a fine, fine husband, father. He's an elder in the church. He's been on the mission field. They've been almost 2 years in Argentina. He's had an interest in missions ever since I've known him. That's one of the very first things we had in common to talk about. But more important than that, as far as I'm concerned, when we moved to Abilene 7 years ago, he and his family made us feel welcome here. For each field is a mission field. And when we came here, they made us feel like we were part of this community. And they continued to do that even after they found out we weren't going to go to the same congregation. We continued to provide that kind of. Today, I was listening to a set of tapes the other day by a person who said the Bible is true because it was written and people gave their life for it at a time when they knew whether those things were true or not. If they weren't true, they wouldn't have been willing to give their life for it. Clyde's got his work cut out for him today, because I know about you, and you have a returning missionary. And he's going to have to be presenting the facts as they are, or when it's over with, he's going to be answering lots and lots of questions. So today is a time of sharing and a time of having to put your feet to the fire. Clyde Austin.
Thank you, Dr. Hamby, for those very pleasant words, encouraging words of introduction. I'd like to introduce Mrs. Hamby today. Would you please stand, Ellie? Yeah. This is Mrs. Hamby. We're delighted to have the Hambys and their children at ACU. And we still have in our scrap paper file, Kelly, some of the circulars that our children put out that summer. Remember when they were in the lawnmower business together and the lawn service business here in Abilene. Two of the Hamby children, two of the Austin children were very enterprising in terms of their summer work. In addition to my wife, Sheila, and our daughters, Joanna and Jan, I'd like to introduce another individual who almost became a part of our family during the last year and a half, Miss Leslie Moore of Abilene, Texas. Leslie, just raise your hand there. Good. Leslie is the young lady who wrote the thesis describing the replies of some 600 returned missionaries of the Church of Christ. You may have been among those who received a questionnaire from Leslie, Dan Coker, Bob Sturgeon, and me, requesting your assistance. We said something to the effect that if you've returned to the United States in the last 10 years, we'd like to ask your help in completing this questionnaire. And of 600 who received that questionnaire, approximately 400 responded, and we had 288 usable replies. Now, I'll be saying more about that study in detail tomorrow, because I think that you'd like to know what our returned missionaries are saying to us, to mission committees, to elderships, and to their colleagues here in the United States and their friends and relatives. So we'll be sharing that tomorrow, and I just wanted to express a very deep word of appreciation to Leslie. It's the finest thesis that I've seen since I've been at Abilene Christian University for 26 years. And I might be a little biased because of the topic, but really I've been on a lot of thesis committees. And in terms of her clarity of writing, in terms of the validity, I think, of the information, as vouched for by our missions faculty, I'm very, very pleased with that thesis. And Leslie, I thank you again for that marvelous contribution to our understanding. And of course, it was done with one goal in mind, and that is to find ways of better serving the Lord Jesus Christ, God the Father, and the Holy Spirit. It was done with the intent of trying to keep our families whole, W-H-O-L-E, through the entire missionary cycle. There's one more person here I'd like to say a word or two about today, and that's Brother Bogan Smith, who led our prayer. Come right in, Jerry. Chair right over here. When I was working on my doctor's degree at the University of Houston, and I was a little low because I'd done poorly on a test, I needed someone to rejoice with me, Bogan and Carolyn Smith and their children were the family that we so often looked to for succor and for nourishment and for support during that period of time. Longtime members of the church at Central and then McGregor Park and now in the Spring Conroe area. What's the name of the new congregation there?
Oak Ridge North.
Oak Ridge North is the new congregation. Then Bob Davidson and Sheila and I and Mert enjoyed being together so much during our days at ACU. Mert and I worked together in student government. We were classmates, and many of you know that they served in Thailand. I wonder if we could ask those who are returning missionaries to stand in the class. Those of you who have returned from a mission field, would you please stand? Just remain standing for a moment here. I wonder if we could begin back here, and you tell us, if you would, your name and the country where you've served and how long you've been there. Okay, and then you can have a seat after you tell us that. Yes, go right ahead. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Steve Hamilton in Kenya, 2 years.
Kenya?
Joe Crisp in Zulu in Guatemala.
In 2 years, thank you.
Ilya,
Paul Ellis in Kenya, 2 years.
Okay.
Les Bennett, Brazil, 8 years.
Gaston Tarbett, West and East Africa, 11 years.
Well,
Bob Davidson, Thailand, 7 years. Brian Street, Guatemala,
here and now. Lisa,
Guatemala. Sheila,
Guatemala.
I'm not
returning
after the
Yes.
23 years.
Yes.
Jack Walker and Uruguay, 5 years.
This is culture shock for her, reverse culture shock for him. We got two curves operating here. Yeah, right?
David Dowdy, I'm in German
Park,
Western.
Helen Brown, 21 years.
Now, how many rich experiences are represented here? And Kelly, tell us a little bit about where you were, you and your wife.
My wife and I spent the last 2 summers in Zambia. We'll be back this summer, and then August 18th, we'll
be here. Good. Kelly and I said, why not develop an in-depth file of materials, teaching opportunities for graduates of Christian schools around the world, overseas dependent schools, and I hope that, Kelly, you'll help bring that to fruition. Last lectureship, a returned missionary, came to my office. He said, Wendell Broom tells me that you've been doing some research on reentry. A reverse culture shock. Come right in, sir. There's some chairs right back here. And I acknowledged that, and he proceeded to tell me about his family situation. He gave me permission to use his family as a case history to share with people. He's now in the process of writing that or developing it for me. He said, we lived in a literate Western country. For over a decade. When we came back to the United States, we found that we were totally unprepared for what we confronted. He and his wife, both graduates of ACU. He gave me permission to say that their daughter had had an abortion. Another daughter had attempted suicide at least twice. And that a son, at that time, lectureship a year ago, was a drug addict, abusing a number of drugs. He said our family fell apart when we returned to the States because we were not prepared for reentry. In doing our research, I recently called the Jesuits. They referred me to a priest in the Congregation of the Holy Spirit. He supposedly is the most knowledgeable Roman Catholic in the world on reentry, at least as far as Roman Catholicism is concerned. He said when we went to the mission field, he'd been in Kenya. He said, when we went to Kenya, they had a big banquet for us, and they applauded us, and they said, how wonderful, how good that you're going to Kenya. And then when we returned, they said to us, why are you so dejected? Why are you depressed? We don't understand you. Why can't you be happy? And he said, so few people have really understood our experiences in Kenya or our experiences upon return. And when I told him on the telephone, and he's now working at the Catholic Research Center in Washington, D.C., when I told him on the telephone about my interest in reverse culture shock, it was like he had found a long-lost buddy somewhere. That because there's so few people seemingly interested in the phenomena of reverse culture shock or reentry. We were visiting with a conservative Baptist friend last spring, and I want to tell you about this organization because I think you'd like to subscribe possibly to the journal or to the newsletter. It's called CITAR, S-I-E-T-A-R, S-I-E-T-A-R, Society for Intercultural Education, Training, and Research. About four or five of our faculty members here, Dr. Dan Coker of our mission faculty, Dr. Carly Dodd in communication, Dr. B.E. Davis in communication, and I are members of CITAR. No special qualifications. If you have $45, you too can belong to CITAR. I can provide you with an application form. But it's the world's largest society that I'm aware of for studying intercultural problems. And when we were there last year, Sheila and I took this one former conservative Baptist missionary to dinner. He'd been the director of the Peace Corps in Guatemala at one time. He'd been born and reared in Latin America. And he said that when we returned, one of our little daughters was fascinated by the elevators. And we stood in front of the elevators for some time. She'd never seen an elevator before. She was born in Guatemala. And they watched the elevators going up and down. And she suddenly exclaimed, "Why, Daddy, that's a box that changes people." She'd see the people go into the box and then leave and then come back again. The doors would open, a different group of people. And that's the way we often respond to some of the things that we see when we return. Canada World Youth is an interesting, I think, very useful service of the Canadian government. It's sort of a junior Peace Corps. They recruit people in their late teens. They train them for 4 months in Canada. And then they serve overseas for 4 months. Not 4 years, but 4 months. And the program has been underway now for some 7 years. Last spring at the CITAR meeting, they reported on a follow-up research study of the young people who had returned from countries around the world. Some very literate countries, some very dismal third world countries. And they said that after 3 years, nearly 40% of those teenagers were still experiencing considerable difficulty in terms of readjusting to Canada. Now think of that. You might have had in the back of your mind a question today when you came to this particular class, something like, well, how long does one have to live overseas before they experience a considerable amount of difficulty upon reentry? And the answer seems to be, at least for one group of people, one sizable segment of people, in a research study very carefully, tightly designed, after only 4 months overseas, nearly 40% of both men and women, experiencing considerable difficulty in readjusting. Well, I have with me a Peace Corps study, one of only two studies done by the Peace Corps of the United States. And let me read from the chapter entitled, Coming Home. Readjustment remains a problem for returning Peace Corps volunteers. 62% of our sample encountered difficulty in this area. 20% found it very difficult. 42% found it somewhat difficult. Now, one of the major problems for our Peace Corps volunteers has been finding a job. Another has been reorienting oneself to the U.S. lifestyle. And some 45 volunteers in that study found it difficult to get used to the fast pace of living, which is the norm in American society. The other study done of Peace Corps volunteers was in 1967. This one in 1977, the last of the major studies, only two studies in the entire history of the Peace Corps. For just a few moments, I'd like to talk about data sources. Let's switch from our introduction now, a brief look at some of the hurt involved in the return. And we'll return to description of some of that hurt a little later today. But I'd like to share with you the search process that we've been undergoing very, very briefly. we have searched some 13 data bases. This means that we've tried to use the computer to speed up the study process. Bob, for the first time in the history of the world, the religion index is online. That means that all of the entries in all of the major religious journals of the world have now been typed onto tapes, at least for the last 10 years. Now, they're working on the 10 years previous to that now. But you can put in terms like reentry and reverse culture shock and rehabilitation and repatriation and reacculturation, other key descriptors as they're called. And the computer starts printing out all of these entries or citations for you with the author's name, the name of the journal, the page numbers, the year. And then if you'd like to pay a little extra money, on offline at night, the computer will print a summary of that article for you. Now, I've been using the computer at TCU some, and Sheila and I used the computer at BYU for some days in the month of March. We spent parts of 5 days on the BYU campus investigating the missionary training program of the Mormon Church and using their mission research library. The Mormons have conducted one study in all of the history of their work. One study is all they've done. We have had no studies until Leslie Moore's study. We have had no studies on reentry or reverse culture shock among returning missionaries of the Church of Christ, at least to the best of my knowledge. We have corresponded with 109 mission agencies. We have corresponded with numerous seminaries, with schools of preaching, with our Christian colleges, with scholars, literally, from coast to coast and in some foreign countries. And we have used indices like this, a computer basis. Psychology, as has been noted, is my teaching field. And I think that rather belatedly, psychologists are making a major contribution in many areas of our church life, our religious life. And I'm thankful that God is giving us the opportunity to serve in this way, to make these contributions. You can imagine that it was with great joy that I found that I could put in certain keywords into the computer, and I could search every article published since 1967 in over 500 journals in the world in less than 10 minutes. Think of the time, Don, isn't that Don, right? No, Don's back over. Yeah, Don was in one of my classes, right? Personnel Methods. How long ago was that? 1957, yeah. And Don did some papers for me. Well, just think what it would be like to go over to the library now and say to them, could you have TCU run, you know, a readout for us on the computer and get all the references on any given topic from over 500 journals of the whole world in less than 10 minutes. Well, we can do that now. We thank the Lord for that capability. And other databases that we've studied in addition to Religion Index and Psychological Abstracts were databases like GPO, the Government Printing Office, and Content and Management Inform, and about 6 or 7 other databases. In the opinion of library specialists, we have covered the major databases. We have found fewer than 200 articles of any kind, popular or otherwise, on reverse culture shock. And the Lord willing, based on the research that Leslie has done and a research team of students who were working with her, and my present student assistant, John Byer, who was here and left just a few moments ago, we hope to publish an annotated bibliography before this spring term is over of all of the known references on reverse culture shock or reentry. And then after that, we hope to publish a practical primer for returned missionaries and for mission committees and for elders. We have numerous requests for articles on reentry or preparing for reentry. And as it is now, we simply have to Xerox some of the better articles that we have found and mail them to the individuals. But I'd like to have some feedback from you after the class is over today or tomorrow as to whether or not you think something like that would really be helpful. Our missions faculty here thinks that it would be helpful to have first a list of the articles, what sources are available, and then taking some of the better articles that are very practical and publishing those in paperback form so that they can be distributed to various groups. Have then, as you can see in this summary, covered sources like these. Under number 5, I might just make a comment. Brigham Young does have the finest missions research library I have seen. I have not seen Fuller's library. When I called Columbia last year, theirs was boxed up and in crates. They were remodeling the library. Emory bought the Hartford School library, right, Gaston? Okay, I haven't had a chance to see that particular library. But I'm talking about in terms of culture shock and reverse culture shock, our immediate question and discussion. And Dr. Tyler, BYU, went out of his way to, and his staff went out of his way to make us feel at home at Brigham Young. How many of you have seen the new Missionary Training Center on the Brigham Young campus? Just raise your hand if you've seen that. They are today, this very day, training between some 2,000 and 3,000 missionaries on that particular campus. Come in, Tom. There's a chair right at the back there. Yeah. Thomas Hans helped train some of our children. We appreciate his fine Bible teaching in Abilene Christian Schools. Glad to have you, Tom. Just think of that. Isn't that staggering? Between 2,000 and 3,000 young people being trained right now to go out on behalf of the Mormons. And I'd made an appointment with the president of the training center. It's an entirely new campus, just short distance away from the main BYQ campus. Entirely new campus of some 14 to 16 buildings. And their new special thrust is for older couples over age 60. They have an entire dormitory for older couples on their campus. And Sheila and I were invited to attend a Jewish Seder conducted by a Brigham Young professor on St. Patrick's Day on the campus there. That was ecumenical, wasn't it? And the couple sitting just next to us at this Jewish Seder, it was just a demonstration of a typical Jewish Seder. I had just returned from Scotland. They were over 60. He'd retired from the telephone company. And in this new program that the Mormons have of sending older people overseas, they just returned from Scotland. They were very, very excited about the work that they had done in Scotland. About a fifth to a seventh of all of their students, 27,000 students, are returned missionaries. And if you think that doesn't make a difference in the tone of the student body, as we spent parts of 5 days there, we were very, very impressed with the spirit of those young people. I think of so much that we need to be doing, you see, in terms of training missionaries. In November, the Lord blessed me with the opportunity to visit with Ruth Yassim, and I'll be sharing some of her materials in just a few moments. She's considered probably the most knowledgeable woman in the United States on the missionary family. Strange set of circumstances. She's Jewish. She's an atheist. Her husband is a PhD anthropologist. She's a PhD sociologist. With their children, they lived in India in 1953, then again in 1958, and then again just recently without the children, with the empty nest syndrome being prevalent. I'll share some of her important insights a little later as we continue to talk. Now, I wonder if you have a question about what I've said thus far. Any comment? I'll pause just briefly for just a question or two, and then I'm going to leave more time at the end. I've tried to describe a little bit of the hurt thus far. I've tried to talk about sources of information and tried to indicate how thorough Leslie and John Byer and other students have tried to be in helping us conduct this survey of the literature. We didn't want to try to reinvent the wheel. And if other people were doing various things that were constructive, we wanted to try to find out about those. And now that we've completed that search, we're ready to move ahead with our research. Now let's look at the total missionary cycle. This is called by Nancy Adler, the one who developed this chart, the expatriate foreign career cycle, those going overseas. You notice you have the home country pre-departure activities. And we have developed in our missions committee at the University Church an entire checklist of pre-departure activities for our missionaries. It's sort of a countdown, chronological countdown of what should take place between the missionaries and the eldership and the congregation before the departure. Of course, and part of that pre-departure countdown is recruitment of the proper people. Now you might say, why are you introducing this entire cycle? Well, as we moved through the 70s, we noted more and more missionary families coming to us for assistance. When I say coming to us, I'm talking about the Department of Psychology at ACU. And we said to ourselves, why are there so many problems among missionary families? There are problems, of course, among people in the United States. But in our judgment, we felt that there was too much hurt among missionary families. we felt that there was something that perhaps we could be doing as Christian psychologists that would help keep people whole throughout this entire cycle. W-H-O-L-E, again. And so we said that it's very important to look at reentry. But really, as we proceeded through our study, our research, we became more and more convinced that it was important to stress every point of the cycle, to underscore every phase of it. That is, to do a better job of recruitment. After we have recruited, then, appropriate individuals, well, then, to do a more thorough job of training those individuals. And that has many aspects to it. Then we tried to say, what can congregations do to keep people whole on the field? If they're there 5 years, or 10 years, or 15 years, or 20 years, as the Hills have almost been in Guatemala. Then what about reentry? And tomorrow we'll share with you some of the facts on reentry. I can say this, that very, very few congregations have been providing counseling at all for their missionaries. That's one of the results. I'll give you a little peek, a little sneak preview there. That was disappointing to us. We suspected that. And we suspected that there were weaknesses in terms of the missionary, mission committee relationship, and we found that one of the most significant problems in the entire study, written repeatedly by missionary after missionary, saying we need stronger relationships. And so, thus, we think every part of the cycle is important. Recruitment and then selection through appropriate testing procedures and interview procedures and checking with recommendations and many other steps. Any question about the cycle that you might like to ask? I'd like to thank Sheila publicly for the support that she has given to me in developing a team-building program. Last summer, the Highland elders and the Rio members of the Rio team approached us and said, could you develop a workshop for the team going to Rio, 15 missionaries, 3 single individuals and 6 married couples? And we said, that would really be a challenge. We'd love that. And so we really didn't know what we were biting off. And so we stopped our research on reverse culture shock, and we said, this is a legitimate part of what we're trying to do, you know, this whole process. We have put together a team-building workshop. The 30-hour workshop has 4 basic goals that deals with a greater understanding of the individual differences among team members, interpersonal communication, and stress, and one other point that has slipped my mind at the moment. I'll come to that. I think I have it right over here. We had 4 basic goals in that workshop. We did a pilot study, pilot run with a team going to Italy the second week in Memphis and working with Howard Bybee and Ellis Long. That same week, there was another team there going to Portugal. We had 3 couples from each team, had 12 missionaries. And then the very next week, we came to Abilene and out at Camp Lutman, a Methodist encampment. We worked on the team-building workshop with the Rio team 4 hours each morning, and then test analysis and interpretation in the afternoons and the evenings. And in times, Sheila and I sat on the outside of the circle observing the team process. How well were they communicating? What communications could we communication problems could we pick up among team members? What roles were people playing in the group? Which ones were initiators? Which ones were stabilizers? Which ones were group clowns or tension relievers? And I think it's necessary to have some humor when you get into some situations like some of you have been in, whether it's in Guatemala, someone tries to steal your car, right, Jerry? A few terrorists that came to visit Jerry one night recently. Or whether you're in Africa. Or whether you're confronted by terrorists in Buenos Aires. So that was really an enlightening experience. And so we came away with sort of a crude team-building model that fits into the first part of the cycle. And then along the way, Ellis and Howard said, could you begin testing a greater number of these team members for us? And so we built a database for another thesis, Leslie, if you know of a student, or some of you know of a thesis student, admissions, for example, Les, or Gaston. We've tested now over 60 missionaries alone during the last year. And that took time away from our original goal of working on reentry only, but you see, it's really a vital part of reentry, isn't it, in a long-range sense. If we do a better job of selection, perhaps, we're just assuming, one of our hunches is that perhaps we'll have fewer problems among missionary families when they return. I was visiting with the personnel secretary of the American Baptist Church in Philadelphia in the summer of 79, when we were just beginning some of this research. And I was picking his brain, free of charge. In fact, he even brought my lunch. But he said, I want to tell you, Clyde, about an interesting call I received the other day. And the American Baptist Church has three teams of psychologists in the United States, and every missionary is required to be phased through these for selection. And then when they return on furlough or when they return after serving on the field, then they must have a reorientation process with these groups of psychologists and psychiatrists. They have one group on the West Coast, and they have one group in the Middle West, and one group on the East Coast. And he said, I got a call from one of these psychologists. And the psychologist said, here, just a minute. I want to put Jim, let's call him Jim X, on the telephone. A man that had been a missionary in India for 7 years. And he said, Jim X, George has something to say to you. It's called George, the personnel secretary here. So Jim got on the telephone and started talking to George. He says, George, the thing I want to tell you is that I never really wanted to go to India in the first place. And you've been there 7 years. And George then said to him, the personnel secretary of the American Baptist Church said to him, why did you go? In a very kind way, trying not to evidence too much exasperation perhaps in his voice. He said, because my wife wanted to go. Because my wife wanted to go. And they'd spent 7 years in that very difficult situation. I have not been there, but I've heard some of our brethren here tell me something about it. I can't imagine the torture that he must have gone through during that time. And he, the next thing was, George, I don't want to go back. Can you reassign us to some other country or let us stay in the United States? Well, you see, if we can avoid that kind of situation in terms of selection, well, then we can avoid some of the problems on the field and avoid some of the problems in terms of the return. Now, what are some of the patterns of response? Some of the patterns of response. There are four, basically. Let me cite these very quickly. In terms of reentry now, we're focusing on the last part of the cycle. We're focusing on the last part of the cycle. I've made those last few comments because I wanted you to know about some of the research taking place now among our brethren in Christian colleges in terms of testing and in terms of team building. And we really need to have quite a group of people in different places working on each part of this cycle, you see. Why? Because the regrettable thing is, as you work with the federal government and other mission groups, there is no valid model for any step in the cycle. There's no program that has validity or truthfulness. In essence, what have we been doing in the Church of Christ and in other churches in terms of selection, recruitment, and training, for example? We've been shooting from our hip pockets. I just want to let that sink in a little bit. The Department of State, our research has shown that the Department of State has no valid training model. Furthermore, they have no valid selection model. They have one clinical psychologist in the entire Department of State. And so that was a situation they were caught with when our hostages returned, with one clinical psychologist in the entire State Department. The Southern Baptists have conducted no research on reentry. The Roman Catholics have conducted no research on reentry. The Mormons have done one study on reentry, the Peace Corps two studies. And so the studies are almost practically non-existent. The Mennonites have done an excellent study, Goshen College professors and a research team there. And so there have been, in essence, in terms of adults, I'll talk about children a little bit later, in terms of adults, there have been about three major studies among religious groups. So let me just repeat, by way of emphasis in terms of the needs, we don't have a valid model for selection. We don't have a valid model for training. We don't have a valid model that I know of for keeping people whole on the field. And there are a few reorientation programs, but we really don't know what kind of job those reorientation programs are doing. Ruth Yassim said that there had not been, to the best of her knowledge, not a single longitudinal study of a missionary family or families. That means that no one has followed missionary families over time to see what happens in their lives. Testing them and interviewing them in depth before they go and after they arrive on the field and then after they return. Now, I realize that that would take a lot of time and money, but brethren, I think that's the kind of research that we need to do. And I hope that the Lord will provide the people and the research funds to accomplish a study like that, or several studies like that. Well, now let's look at the patterns of response very quickly. Let me place another transparency on the board. This is called simply the W Club curve because of its basic shape. Looks somewhat like a W. Nothing fancy about it. No fancy statistical term there. This represents life at home. You see, this says native culture, foreign culture, native culture. Home, home, overseas. And the central section here is overseas. So the person perhaps is, say, is a typical government employee or, say, soldier or Army career officer. And he's moving along, perhaps a little bit downhill in terms of his career, a little bit depressed. And then he finds that he's going to get an overseas assignment, and there's an element of hope, perhaps, that enters in. And so you see an elevation in the curve. The curve goes up. It's represented by this little segment here. Then he goes overseas, and he's excited about what he sees. In Argentina, we lacked those beefy de lomos, those filet mignons for 95 cents. They were great, you know. We had those first movies, they were 35 cents. We could see all the current run movies down there. Same time they were being shown here for 35 cents. Sometimes you could see a 37-cent doubleheader of oldies, golden oldies in the States. You know, we were fascinated by the transportation and by the old horse-drawn carts and the different housing. You see, but that doesn't last too long, does it? Maybe a few months, maybe the first year. There's a certain fascination that's there. And then there's the dip that we call continuing, perhaps, not only culture, as you have pointed out by the fine article that you've given me, a Dr. Dye, the initial shock here, when you first go down, see the peak, then the first drop is called the shock, the culture shock. But you have continuing culture stress over time. And the interesting thing about the few studies that have been done, and I have changed this from the original model, the original W-curve model, is that the studies are showing, the few that have done, they're not definitive, they're suggestive. They only, we haven't done that many. You know, like how many tests would you want done before you give your child a certain kind of vaccine? Lots of studies, right? Well, we need more than three or four studies to say that this is definitive. But the studies are showing that reverse culture shock is more severe than the initial culture shock. 25 years ago, I just looked at the date today on this article. I wanted to get the date to be sure. Eugene Nida was saying 25 years ago in Practical Anthropology, the journal that's now known as Missiology, off the top of his head, in terms of his own personal experiences, that reverse culture shock or reentry was more difficult than the initial culture shock. And the few studies that have been done now today are proving him to be correct. And he made that observation 25 years ago, that the reentry over here, you can see the curve is deeper here. There's a bigger trough there. It drops lower, so to speak. And then, of course, there is a readjustment process over time. And that varies in terms of a number of factors. One interesting thing, though, is that, as Leslie found out in her research, of the few studies that have been done, it makes no difference from what type of country you have re-entered the United States. We were going to Cotton say in our study, what hypothesis was to have been, we assume that if a person returns to the United States from Egypt, for example, or perhaps from Zambia, that he might have a more difficult time readjusting than the individual who returns from London, England. But the studies don't show that. The studies don't show that. And so when we found that the review of the literature didn't show that, then we dropped that idea for a hypothesis. You can correct me. If I've said everything fairly accurately here today, do you want to make a corrective statement at this point, Leslie? Yeah, she might wish to stop me here. So I thought that's a pretty good hunch, isn't it? A pretty good hypothesis. Dan Coker and Bob Sturgeon and I were patting ourselves on our backs. We said, well, why don't we try that as a hypothesis? But it's simply not true. So then the person makes an adjustment, improves, and then re-enters the United States. You see, and there's that molasses pecan pie that you haven't eaten in a long time. And there was Dr. Pepper. We didn't have root beer in Argentina. We had Fritos only the last part of the time. They're talking about some of the foods now. And people have turkey and dressing for us, and there's quite an excitement in the air. People are justifiably proud, perhaps, of you as you've returned. But then, after a month or two, zoom, depression. Depression. The few studies that have been done show typically this kind of curve. And Leslie, what did your study show here in terms of return now that some people were still having difficulty after how long? About 9 or 10% of the study, as I recall, still having difficulty after a year. And keep in mind what I said a while ago about the Canadian youth abroad people. Difficulty after 3 years, 40% of them still having difficulty. So this is something of the basic shape of the curve, something of that which is happening. Now, you can imagine, if we can just take this for a moment, and you see, you have perhaps a young lady, let's say this is the return here, entry back into the United States. And they're at a certain place, maybe 3 years. And then let's say that the father gets another job. This young lady was born overseas. Well, for her, it's initial culture shock because she's never been in the United States, or perhaps she's only been here for brief visits. For the parents, it's reverse culture shock. And then they move, and she's in the middle of her high school years, and she goes into a situation, and the father gave me permission to cite this. He said medical tests proved that there was no physical problem, and the doctors gently suggested that there might be a mental illness. Can you imagine why? You see, with the re-entry and trying to readjust during the teenage years and the student's identification being tied to the father's role, basically, being tied to the father's role. And now, rather than being, in some cases, and you know this is true, and I don't say this disparagingly, but we were bigger frogs in the pond over there in Buenos Aires. We came back here, we were small frogs in a big pond. And you see, and you may have been only one of two or three missionaries saying Montevideo or somewhere like that. And that carried a certain amount of prestige. Let's just face that as a fact, you see, in terms of the brotherhood and mission write-ups in the papers. And so then you return and you lost that status. And the kids say to your sons or daughters in school, well, what does your dad do? Well, my dad's the personal work director at the A&M Church of Christ or something like that, you know. And I'm not saying that that's not valuable or important, you see. But that child no longer has a father who is the missionary to Bangkok, you know, for Churches of Christ. And so this child has culture shock of a new situation piled on top of reverse culture shock. Returning to the United States, she's never been here before. Culture shock. She has culture shock piled on top of culture shock. And the parents have reverse culture shock coming back, and then the culture shock of moving into another new situation within a relatively short period of time after they return to the United States. And the doctor's saying, well, there's nothing physically wrong with this young lady. Her problems are mental in nature. So they're addressing themselves to that problem now. We only recently, in the last few months, had a discussion in regard to this very situation. Well, one person has outlined the pattern something like this. Four parts to the pattern. Number one, excitement. Number two, reestablishment / frustration, irritation over phasing back into something. We thought we wouldn't have difficulty coming back from Argentina. We were going back into our home. We fortunately didn't sell it. We kept it. We rented it out. Coming back into my job, John Stevens kept my tenure for me. Bless his heart. You know, didn't fire me or anything. Didn't say, well, you can go without your tenure. Our children were coming back to the same school, but we had changed and they had changed. And there was frustration as we tried to, again, become a cohesive working group, say within the Department of Psychology, or as they tried to move back into their social groups at the Abilene Christian Schools. Phase three of the pattern is a sense of control, a sense of control, trying to develop some sense of control. In this phase, scapegoating of friends and relatives may take place, and of people in the church. Yassim calls it cheap moralization. These people are not as good Christians as we had overseas in our congregations there. These people really don't worship God like we worship God in country X. And so as one attempts to gain this sense of control of the situation, to make oneself feel good, there's a scapegoating process that often takes place. I'm not saying always takes place, but I'm saying can take place on occasion. Four, then readaptation. And part of that might be saying to the elders, how can we use the skills of this missionary? If Jerry doesn't mind, I'd like to say that his skills are being used very admirably in follow-up work at the Christian Service Center. We have many Mexican-American families who are the recipients of benevolence in our community. And I salute Paul Garrett and his staff members there. And Jerry has become a very integral part of that and is doing much good among families in Abilene. Now, I'm not saying that perhaps that's the perfect fit or that Jerry is entirely happy with that. I hope that he does like it to some extent. He might be reluctant to say something since I'm an elder and he's the missionary in the same congregation. But perhaps that is one kind of answer, you see, where we try to utilize the knowledge and the skills of that person who's been overseas in that important readaptation process. So excitement, reestablishment, sense of control, and readaptation. And the problem areas are many, of course, and these are in terms of professional areas. Where do I fit into the job picture? You know, am I going to be the second-ranking minister on the staff or the third-ranking? What will my title be? Will I be the minister of adult education of all the left-handed adults in the congregation? So if we use the term professional to cover not only missionaries, but returning Peace Corps volunteers and returning families who've been overseas teaching, perhaps. Finance. What is an adequate salary? You look at the inflation rates, and, of course, you're shocked. One article is entitled, that I've read, The Shock of Coming Home. One person said it's an icy shock that a person receives when they come home. And you think, what in the world does Teller 24 mean? You know, are 19.5% interest? Yes, that's the current rate for students who are going to medical school or psychology majors who want to go to graduate school. 19.5% interest on their student loans for graduate work. Then another problem area is that of cultural. Who am I? Was I really reared in this affluent country? You know, is this my country? I'm just hurrying through this. I'm running out of time. Fourth problem area, that of social. Insecurity manifests itself. People feel left out behind the times. June Douglas permitted me to record an interview with her, and she said, I want you to share it with people at lectureship and at other times. She and her husband, Bob, spent 9 years in the Middle East. She said many times when we were sitting there talking with you and Carl Burkeen and Sheila and Smitty and Roy Willingham and Nola and others, we didn't know how to enter into the conversation. They'd lived in Tripoli and in Cairo and in Beirut. Totally different culture. And he spoke pretty good Farsi. And she'd had a maid. And so before a party one evening, she gave me permission to say this. Before a party one evening, Smitty Burkeen went over to the Douglas' house and said, June, don't you intend to sweep the kitchen floor? And don't you intend to vacuum all this? You see, June had not readjusted to the fact that she had to do the housework. And she said, I was really dragging my feet, and I was depressed at times because I was going through the process of realizing that I no longer had access to a maid or maids for like $20 a month or $25 a month, full-time service, you see. She said, I went to the car wash place. And they said, go at just a moderate speed through the car wash. And I came out at the other end, half the car was washed and half I was unwashed. And maybe some of you can relate to that. So she said I had to embarrassingly go back to the front and do it over again. Sheila was reading on one of the questionnaires just the other day, and we haven't by any means exhausted all the information on those. Well, one man explained how embarrassed he was the first time that he went shopping in a supermarket, and he didn't realize that the carts were somewhat top-heavy. And he said he picked up a carton of milk and didn't realize how heavy that would be, a gallon cart, and dropped it. And then later on spilled everything out of the cart right in the middle of the supermarket. In the survey that we did in 1977, Paul Broadus discovered that there were two families here who'd gone to the supermarket, looked over the items available, and then departed without buying a single thing. They were so overwhelmed by the choices available to them. 19 cans of English peas, or 25 different cans of Duncan Hines cake mix, or whatever. And these kinds of things are problems for our returning missionaries socially. And we are trying to cite exact cases rather than what Austin thinks. What about the area of linguistics? I wonder if our returning missionaries would understand, and this is not to their discredit, but perhaps we haven't helped them keep up, Three Mile Island. If they're going back to California and someone said something about Proposition 13, linguistically, would they understand what people were talking about? Or if they were on the campus and somebody said to them, one of our students said, "You got it." You know, that's one of the favorite things for our students to say on the high school and college level. If such and such is true, you got it. And then, of course, finally, a major problem area is the area of national and political. Of the numerous missionaries who've told me that they tried to drive 70 miles per hour on these West Texas roads and they got speeding tickets. They didn't realize that we had a 55 mile an hour speed limit, you see. It didn't make quite that much of an impact, and they didn't realize how serious we were in terms of the energy crisis. And so inflation hits them, 55 mile per hour speed limits hit us, and many other kinds of problems nationally and politically. I'll stop there. We'll continue tomorrow, but I want to leave some time for questions, about 5 or 6 minutes of questions. Yes, David? To some extent. We are trying to in our bibliography, we'll have articles on returning military families, on Vietnam veterans, on Peace Corps volunteers. There's been only one study done that I can find by a major corporation of the United States. And we're including information from that, and then those few studies done by religious groups. There have been about 8 dissertations on missionary children. I'll have more to say about missionary children tomorrow. We've been focusing more on the adults today and the general picture, the general hurt, sources of information. But yes, the patterns are somewhat similar. I would hope that the Peace Corps studies I've written for the 1967 study, I don't have it in my possession, would give us more information because they lived on the economy more like missionaries do. But some of the same general principles apply, yes. Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh. Yes. Native from those countries. Uh-huh. This applies to a couple, if you
were
supposed to show, in this Italia, to a couple that they are both from different cultures.
Yes.
Study-based.
Yes, for example, if you don't mind, if I say something about you and Jack just a little, would you mind? Jack married Beatrice in Montevideo, Uruguay, on the eastern coast of South America, our neighbors there, not just north of us, when we were living in Argentina. Jack has been going through re-entry to his native culture. Beatrice has never been to the United States, is that correct? Or you visited here?
Yes.
Okay, but they'll be here for a while because Jack has come back to do graduate work, and we've been talking a little bit about that. I've enjoyed very much the conversations that we've had. We visited for about an hour, hour and a half together on 2 different occasions, and we'll be continuing those conversations. I appreciate people letting me pick their brains and people sharing information with me. And you'll be going through initial culture shock to this culture. I'm sure already experiencing some of that. And so there's 2 different processes operating there for in your family. And one thing of concern to me is that we have not done more research on missionary couples that are binational or bicultural. Is that the correct way to say it? Missiologist here on the front row? Bicultural, okay. Bicultural, okay. We had, from the University Church, we had 2 couples in Buenos Aires that were bicultural. One man from the United States and his wife from Germany. And another couple where the man was from the United States and his wife was born and reared in Mexico. And of course, it was quite a shock initially to her when she found that a lot of her Spanish terms wouldn't work in Argentina. And so she had culture shock in regard to Spanish just like everyone else. Even though she was born and reared in Mexico, the Spanish is different in Argentina. And I wish that we had more couples to study. And I don't mean study in the sense that you're guinea pigs or monkeys or anything like that. I'm talking about the serious purposes I mentioned at the outset, so we can better serve the Lord. And number two, so that we can keep families whole. I'm really concerned about the mental health of our missionaries. And I think that many of us who are elders and mission committee members need to be more concerned than we have been in the past. And I just feel sure that we can develop better training programs, and then better reorientation programs for our missionaries. Start feeding them information before they come back. And we haven't been prepared to do that like we had hoped, you see, because we didn't have anything in print, Jerry, that we could have Xeroxed a few things and should have. On the third day, I'll be talking about proposed solutions to some of these problems, proposed programs of action. Tomorrow, I'd like to talk about missionary children, primarily, share with you information from studies on missionary children and the major problems confronting them and some of the reactions in returning to the States. And some of the kinds of things that might be done there. Is there another question? Yes, Leslie? Comment. Yeah.
Been in that study, I think,
okay. That 1 minute that study did then. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And have any of you seen any studies on bicultural families, any in-depth studies where the missionary couple is bicultural, the husband from one culture and the wife from another culture? If you have, I'd like to know about that. That's another whole realm of research. On the third day, I'll talk about some of the kinds of studies, practical studies we need to be doing. For example, so that you won't think it's all negative, I don't intend for it to be that way. Where I'm coming from, I've been working a lot in therapy, and you'd understand that. And I'm saying to you, one of the things I'm trying to say is I want to work more in intervention and prevention. You see. Forgot what I was going to say. Sheila, what was I going to say? Yeah. And so naturally, I might come across as being a little more... Oh, I know now what I was going to say. I was talking with Dub Orr. Bob, some of you know Dub Orr. He's an elder at 11th and Willis. And his point was very well taken, and I agree with it. He said, what about those families that have not had difficulty? What seems to hold those families together through thick and thin? What are they doing that's right? So right, in fact, that they have few frustrations and few difficulties, or relatively few. I think most of us would agree, if we were honest, that we go through something like this, and it varies in terms of degree. It's quantitatively different. So there are varying degrees of reentry, shock and stress over time. But that's another kind of study that needs to be done, and not just one study. After you've done a study, that is just, after all, only one study. And we need to study those families, and I could name some missionaries, and you probably could too, where there have not been significant problems. And what have they done? What have their elders done, their mission committees done, that's helped keep them whole? Another comment here. Yes, Bob?
I don't think you ever get over this re-entry culture shock. Uh-huh. I think I'm still suffering. I've been all 12 years.
Uh-huh.
But I know when I went to Thailand, they told me I need to get a driver's license. I went up to that window, finally found out where it was, and I said, I'd like to get a driver's license. He said, that'd be $5. I said, well, aren't you going to ask me to drive? He said, I figured if you couldn't drive, if you didn't know how to drive, you wouldn't have been here. I like that.
Yeah.
When I got back, they said, I objected to the driving. I wouldn't tell the policeman there.
Yeah.
I said, look, I know how to drive, or I wouldn't be wanting a license. I find myself really fighting, this kind of red paint type of a deal, because in Thailand, they didn't have fishing license, hunting license, and I hadn't bought a hunting license. I just don't fish. I'd rather not fish or hunt than to go through all that. But see, you see, I'm still fighting.
Terrifying, right. Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have known that there would be countries in the world where you don't have to take driving tests if I wouldn't have gone overseas.
Well, you're right.
People are just blindly doing things here in America. Yeah.
Amen. Bob, was you right, the Argentine president? It takes 6 weeks to get a driver's license there.
Oh, I tell you, I do it away with the whole system.
Yeah. Okay.
I know that sounds shocking to all you people here, but we probably, if they had to be some research, I doubt there'd be very many more wrecks.
But, you know, Dr. Yuseem says that she thinks maybe it might be inadequate. She's agreeing with Bob Davidson to talk about adjustment. She says many people never adjust. They learn how to adapt. They learn how to adapt. But part of our hearts are still in Buenos Aires. Yeah, right? Parts of Bill still in Bangkok, in Kenya, and other places. Yes, ma'am.
I was just wondering,
No.
You don't come back and fit right in.
That's right.
And so I'm curious to know how you go about defining adaptation versus.
It's a very good point. She's saying that it's normal to have these readjustment experiences. And I'm glad that you pointed that out. It's entirely normal. When we start talking about problems, we're talking about cases of serious depression that may need the attention of the psychiatrist. The cycle is very great, manic, depressive, and need lithium, for example, to help control that cycle. Are we talking about where missionary children, and I cannot name them ethically, obviously, but with whom we've counseled in our department who are schizophrenic. You know, they're out of touch with reality. They're psychotic. And so when I talk about... Okay. And also one of the kinds of things that we're seeing is this business of a change of lifestyle. If you have a family that's been, say, with the State Department in four or five different countries, move every year, and then they come back to the United States and they're in two or three different places, change is a way of life. And to suddenly get married, say, maybe at a relatively early age, and some of the things I'm going to say that Yuseem has discovered, I hope that you can come back to hear this, not because of me, but because of the information that we've been able to put together. You see, and so some of these people have a lifestyle of change, and to abruptly settle down and get married when they perhaps have not experienced maturation yet is a real problem. That's one of the things I want to address myself to tomorrow. So that'd be the way I would define major problems. So those are some of the major problems area we have seen. Like at the outset, I talked about abortion and suicide attempts and drug addicts and schizophrenia, major depression. These are some of the major problem areas. Yes. Yes, that's correct. Like one man said, it's been a number of years since we were in the mission field, and we were happy to receive your questionnaire, the one Leslie sent out, and I will return mine. But my wife cannot yet face the issues that you raise in this questionnaire. And I hope you will understand why she cannot complete it. Then one of our good friends who'd been back longer than 10 years said, you know him well, you played football with him, said, now, Clyde, I'm not mad at you because you excluded me from this study. Leslie and I and the others had agreed on the 10-year cutoff. Been back 10 years. By the way, around 70%. Had been back less than 5 years, so the results are fairly recent in terms of recency. But he said, there are things happening to us today, he's been back 12 to 15 years, that we're only now fully understanding. And if you'd sent me this questionnaire 1 year after our return or 6 months after our return, I would not have been able to answer the questionnaire intelligently in terms of some of the long-range problems that have impacted our family. And this man is an ACU graduate, done a marvelous job of mission work. And he's saying to me, Clyde Austin, some of you characters need to do a study of those people who've been back longer than 10 years. What's happening in the lives of those people? Well, thank you so much. You've been a very good class, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow, the Lord willing. And thank you again, Kelly.